Usually when you talk about like a medical diagnosis, there's this expectation of precision.
Oh, yeah. Completely.
It's almost like traditional engineering. I mean, you break your arm, you go to the hospital, and the x-ray shows that jagged white line on the black background.
Right. And the doctor just points and says, you know, there it is. That's the problem.
Exactly. It's incredibly binary. And we deeply crave that visibility, don't we?
We really do.
Like, we want things to be categorized to make logical sense, you know, to have a clear chain of cause and effect. But then you step into the future of software development in the age of AI, and well, suddenly that x-ray machine is just completely shattered.
Yeah, it's a total mess.
We are looking at a landscape that is no longer binary at all. In fact, if we look at the massive stack of sources we are doing a deep dive into today, the foundation of how humans build the digital world is fracturing in real time.
It really is. It's the absolute definition of diagnostic muddy waters. And the contrast in how the titans of the industry are reacting to this shift is, frankly, it's jarring.
Right, like they don't agree at all.
Not even a little bit. You're looking at fundamentally incompatible visions of reality here.
And that's actually the perfect place to jump in. Because, for you listening, our mission today is to separate the hype from the reality of this AI coding revolution. We really want to uncover what happens when the cost of creating software drops to near zero.
Which is a huge question.
It is. Because, okay, on one hand, you have Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei. He goes to Davos and then repeats this in a May 5th financial briefing in New York, making what basically sounds like a doomsday prediction for traditional software engineering.
Yeah, a total doomsday scenario.
He is claiming, point blank, that the cost of writing an application is sliding toward a price floor of essentially free. Like he's saying apps will soon cost pennies and be thrown away after a single use.
Right, but then you flip to the exact opposite side of the spectrum.
Oh man, yeah, Linus Torvalds.
Exactly, the creator of the Linux kernel. And he gets visibly frustrated, like literally angry, when people say AI is writing all the code.
He does not hold back.
No. He compares AI to a basic compiler and essentially tells the industry to calm down and stop hyperventilating.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because anyone paying attention to this space is probably wondering how two of the most consequential figures in modern computing can look at the exact same technological leap and come away with completely opposing verdicts.
Well, the underlying data here, you know, looking at Anthropic's own 2026 reports, Dave Farley's architectural analyses, the SSAI metrics, it all suggests they might actually both be looking at the wrong variable.
Wait, really? How so?
So the public narrative is obsessively focused on job replacement.
Right.
Everyone wants to know if the robot is coming for their keyboard.
Yeah, of course. People are worried about their livelihoods.
Naturally. But if you dig into the mechanics of what happens when code costs nothing, the story isn't about developers disappearing. It's about a massive, terrifying structural shift in how human beings manage complexity.
Okay, that is fascinating. Let's start with Amodei's doomsday economics then, because it's the loudest narrative in the room, and frankly, it's the one that has investors sweating right now.
Oh, absolutely sweating.
When he says software is becoming essentially free, he isn't just saying, like, you can fire a few junior developers to save on overhead. He introduced this concept of disposable software, which I find just mind-bending.
It breaks the fundamental economic physics of the tech industry. It entirely inverts the model we've relied on for, what, 40 years?
Yes, something like that. Because historically, software is front-loaded with this massive capital expense, right?
Exactly. You pay a team of highly specialized engineers millions of dollars for 2 years just to build an application. And because the creation cost is so astronomically high, the only way to make a profit is to amortize that cost over a long period.
Right, by selling it to millions of users or locking enterprise clients into these like 10-year subscriptions.
Right. Software is treated like physical infrastructure. I mean, you don't build a bridge and then tear it down the next day.
But Amodei's thought experiment at Davos suggests we are about to start doing exactly that.
Yes.
He asked the audience to imagine a Tuesday morning marketing meeting. You need to visualize customer churn against some highly specific, weird internal data set.
A very common corporate scenario.
Totally. So today you'd have to buy a specialized SaaS product for $50,000 a year or wait 3 weeks for your data analyst to build a custom dashboard.
Right.
But Amodei says in the very near future, you just speak your intent to an AI. It writes the Python script, builds the React front end, spins up a temporary AWS instance, and generates a fully functioning custom enterprise dashboard just for that 9 a.m. meeting.
And this is the crucial part. At 10 a.m. when the meeting is over, you delete the entire code base.
You just trash it.
You throw it in the trash. It costs like 12 cents in compute power to generate. You aren't going to maintain it. You aren't going to update its dependencies. You aren't going to store it.
Wow.
The code is literally cheaper than the cognitive load of keeping it around.
Think about the shockwaves that sends through the stock market. I mean, if I'm an investor looking at incumbent software as a service companies, the massive giants like ServiceNow or Snowflake or even Microsoft, their entire competitive moat relies on a specific premise.
Right. The premise that building complex enterprise software is too hard and too expensive for a client to just replicate on a whim.
Exactly. If the moat is just, hey, our software is hard to write and writing software suddenly costs pennies, that moat completely evaporates.
And we are already seeing the financial markets react to this logic, like, aggressively.
Yeah.
If you look at the year-to-date numbers from the sources, ServiceNow is down 39%.
Wow.
Snowflake has lost 35% of its value. Even Microsoft, which has an incredible distribution advantage and bundled Copilot across its entire 365 suite, they're off 15% since January.
That's huge for a company like Microsoft.
It is. Wall Street is looking at these tools and realizing that the barrier to entry for digital products is just plummeting to zero.
And meanwhile, Anthropic isn't being shy about their endgame at all. They are out there reportedly seeking a $900 billion valuation in private rounds.
Yeah, almost $1 trillion.
Right. And the pitch they are making to institutional investors isn't the standard Silicon Valley line. They aren't saying, hey, Claude makes your coding team 20% faster so you can ship features quicker.
No, their pitch is fundamentally adversarial to the current labor market.
They're pitching a total substitution. They are saying Claude is a replacement for the global wage bill of knowledge workers.
Which is just a staggering claim to make in a pitch deck. I mean, they are essentially betting the global economy that human cognition, specifically the translation of business logic into computer syntax, is a depreciating asset.
But, okay, I have to push back here because this feels like a classic Silicon Valley blind spot. It feels too clean.
How do you mean?
Well, if code is essentially free, does every company in the Fortune 500 just, like, stop hiring programmers on a Tuesday and replace them with a server rack? We are completely ignoring human nature and basic macroeconomic principles here.
You are hitting on the exact flaw in the end of the programmer narrative. And this is where Dave Farley's architectural analysis enters the picture and honestly completely dismantles Amodei's doomsday scenario.
Oh, good. I love Farley's take on this.
Yeah, Farley, who is this deeply respected veteran software engineer and a pioneer of continuous delivery, he invokes a concept from 19th century economics called Jevons Paradox.
Yes. Okay, I went down a complete rabbit hole on this part of the research for you all listening. Jevons Paradox originally applied to coal back in the 1800s.
Right, the steam engines.
Exactly. Engineers invented a more efficient steam engine that required significantly less coal to produce the same amount of power. So the logical assumption was, great, we will now consume less coal as a society.
But the exact opposite happened.
Right. Because the steam engine became so cheap and efficient to run, it became profitable to use it for literally everything. Industries that could never afford steam power suddenly adopted it.
And the total consumption of coal exploded precisely because the efficiency of using it improved. Farley argues that applying this to software completely reframes the AI revolution.
So it's not about doing the same amount of work with fewer people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Lowering the barrier to creating code won't mean we need fewer developers. It means we're going to generate vastly, unfathomably more code.
It's like what happened with the food industry over the last 50 years. When we figured out how to mass produce cheap calories, when fast food made it possible to get 1,000 calories for $2 in 5 minutes, we didn't suddenly say, oh, I've met my daily caloric requirement. I will now save my money and stop eating.
Far from it.
We completely changed our diet. We gorged on the cheap, easily accessible calories. And suddenly society had to deal with the systemic compounding health consequences of that overconsumption.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it.
Right. Applying Jevons Paradox to tech means cheap code just guarantees we're going to gorge on software.
And the health consequence of gorging on cheap code is what Farley identifies as a complexity bomb. The fatal flaw in Amodei's disposable software view is the assumption that typing the syntax was the expensive bottleneck in engineering.
But it wasn't.
Any senior developer will tell you, typing was never the bottleneck.
What was it then? Understanding the business problem.
Exactly. The bottleneck has always been cognitive. It is designing a scalable architecture. It's understanding the unwritten edge cases of the business.
Oh, like figuring out how a new feature impacts a legacy database.
Right, and integrating new logic into an existing incredibly fragile system without breaking it. AI is currently accelerating the easiest part of the job, the typing to light speed, while completely overwhelming the hardest part, which is the understanding.
So you are generating massive amounts of text, spinning up these complex digital structures overnight, but nobody is mapping the underlying dependencies.
Nobody at all.
If I can take your city planning metaphor from earlier, it's like we figured out how to 3D print a 100-story skyscraper in 10 seconds. We're throwing up a massive metropolis overnight because the bricks are free.
But nobody is laying down the plumbing.
Exactly. Nobody is mapping the electrical grid beneath the streets. And the moment millions of people actually move into that city and flush the toilets at the same time, the entire subterranean infrastructure just explodes.
And that subterranean explosion isn't a future hypothetical. It is detonating in real time right now inside modern engineering organizations.
Wow.
Which leads us into a massive operational paradox that Anthropic's own data actually highlights.
Right.
If you look at their 2026 Agentic Coding Trends report, there is this fascinating, almost comical contradiction.
Let's hear it.
According to their metrics, developers are currently using AI in roughly 60% of their daily workflow. It's ubiquitous.
Okay, but wait, here's where it gets really interesting for the listener. They use the tool for 60% of their work, but the developers report that they are able to fully delegate only 0 to 20% of their tasks to the AI.
Right. They call it the delegation gap.
You have developers leaning on Claude or GitHub Copilot constantly, but they trust it with almost nothing unsupervised. Why is there such a massive disconnect?
What's fascinating here is it comes down to the difference between local execution and global judgment. Engineers are perfectly happy delegating a low-risk, tightly scoped task. Like, write a function that sorts this list of dates chronologically.
The AI nails that.
It does. But the moment a task becomes ambiguous, the moment it requires understanding the unwritten rules of the product's architecture or the aesthetic preferences of the user base, the developer instantly pulls the task back.
Because they don't trust it.
They cannot trust the AI to run unsupervised because the AI lacks persistent global context.
Let's dig into that lack of context because it defines how we actually interact with these machines. Right now, most of this interaction is prompt-driven. You open a chat interface and you type a request. But that interface is fundamentally amnesic, isn't it?
Completely amnesic. Mm. The AI's memory only exists within the boundaries of that specific conversation window. If a developer types, build a user checkout flow, that is a vibe.
A vibe.
Yeah, it is a casual request, not a rigid engineering specification. It lacks explicit constraints. The prompt doesn't say, hey, don't break the legacy Stripe integration on line 400, or ensure the database query resolves in under 200 milliseconds to meet our SLA.
So without those explicit testable outcomes defined upfront, what is the AI doing?
It's just making highly educated guesses based on statistical probabilities of what a checkout flow usually looks like on the broader internet.
And because execution is suddenly so cheap and fast, even if the AI is just guessing, teams are generating a tidal wave of this stuff.
A literal tidal wave.
There was a wild statistic from the PathMode report that perfectly illustrates Jevons' paradox in action. They found that a staggering 27% of AI-assisted work currently being done in these companies is stuff that wouldn't have existed otherwise.
This completely shifts our understanding of productivity. They aren't just doing their normal jobs faster. They are inventing new jobs.
Right. Because the code is essentially free, teams are suddenly building things they never historically had the budget or time to justify. They are fixing tiny, annoying UI paper cuts.
They are spinning up highly specific internal dashboards that only, like, three managers in the Omaha office will ever look at.
Exactly. Or they're running weird little experimental features just to see what happens.
Which fundamentally shifts the bottleneck of the entire technology industry. If engineering capacity, the literal ability to write the code, is no longer the scarce resource, you have to ask yourself, what is the new scarce resource?
And the answer is product judgment.
Yes. The bottleneck shifts from execution to deciding what actually deserves to exist.
There was a brilliant moment in the Google Developers panel discussion we reviewed that drove this home. Varun Mohan, one of the leads, made a point that just because you can build anything instantly doesn't mean you should.
Right.
He used the example of UI design. If you have a mobile app and the AI makes it incredibly easy to just instantly generate and add 100 new buttons and features to the interface, you haven't magically created a better product.
No, you've created a confusing, bloated mess that your users will absolutely hate.
Exactly. The scarce resource is the human being who can look at those 100 potential buttons and say, no, only this one specific button matters to the customer.
And enforcing that kind of product judgment on an AI requires a massive shift in how we work. Path mode defines this as the transition from prompt-driven orchestration to intent-driven orchestration.
Okay, we need to spend some time exploring the mechanics of this, because this feels like the dividing line between companies that will survive this shift and companies that will drown in their own code.
It really is the dividing line.
Earlier in our sources, there was a case study from Rakuten. They unleashed an AI agent on a 12.5 million line legacy code base. And it successfully implemented a new feature during a single autonomous run that lasted 7 hours straight.
7 hours. Just let that sink in.
How do you actually delegate to a machine for 7 hours if you just give it a vague prompt? If you do what people call vibe coding, it's going to destroy the system, isn't it?
Oh, it will absolutely shred the system. Vibe coding is improvisational. It's iterative prompting, where success is defined simply as, hey, it compiled, and it looks like it works on my local machine.
Right, which is fine for a tiny script.
Yeah, that is fine if you're building Emoti's one-hour disposable dashboard. But if you let a vibe-coded agent run autonomously for 7 hours inside a 12-million-line enterprise system...
Yeah, what happened?
You're going to spend the next 7 weeks trying to untangle the catastrophic, cascading damage it caused to hidden dependencies you didn't even know existed.
Okay, so if vibe-coding is the poison, intent-driven orchestration is the antidote. What does that actually look like for a developer sitting at their desk?
It means treating your specifications as actual, rigorous infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
You aren't chatting with a bot anymore. You are authoring structured intent specs.
So like very specific rules.
Exactly. This means defining clear, unbending objectives, establishing the exact mathematical outcomes required, explicitly lifting the known edge cases, and putting rigid constraints on what APIs the agent is allowed to touch.
So success is no longer defined as just it runs.
No. Success is defined as it achieved the verified outcomes based on the upfront rules, without violating the constraints. You are essentially creating a mathematically sound delegation protocol that an agent can follow for hours without ever needing to tap a human on the shoulder to ask a clarifying question.
But let's be real about human nature for a second.
Okay.
Writing mathematically sound, rigorous specifications is boring. It's really hard work. It's exactly the kind of rigorous thinking developers try to avoid by jumping straight into writing code.
That is very true.
So what happens when developers don't adopt intent-driven orchestration? What happens when a team of 50 engineers all decide to just rely on vibe coding and flood the company repository with cheap, fast AI code?
What happens is a complete systemic collapse of the quality assurance process.
Mm-hmm.
The traditional human review system literally buckles under the sheer volume of text.
And the data on this collapse is terrifying. For you listening, we looked at a massive study from FosAI. They're a firm that specializes in analyzing research and development efficiency.
Their numbers are just wild.
They really are. They track telemetry data from over 22,000 developers, and the numbers look like a typo. Teams that deeply integrated AI into their workflows saw their code change rates, the sheer amount of new code being pushed spike by 861%.
861%. Stop and think about the physical reality of that number. The volume of text being shoved into the company's repositories is nearly 10 times higher than it was a year ago.
But here is the fatal flaw in the system. Human reading speed hasn't improved at all.
No, we are still limited by biological wetware.
Exactly. So because there is 10 times as much code, review times for those proposed changes jumped by 441.5%.
And because human reviewers simply cannot keep up with that fire hose of machine-generated text, FSAI found that 31.3% of pull requests, meaning proposed changes to the core production code base, were merged with zero human review.
Zero. None. They literally couldn't read it fast enough, so they just closed their eyes, assumed the AI knew what it was doing, and clicked approve.
The inevitable downstream result of abandoning review. Defect rates, the amount of broken code shipped to users, jumped from 9% to 54%.
That's unacceptable for any business.
Production incidents, meaning actual software outages or critical bugs hitting real-world customers, went up 2.4 times.
There is a quote in the sources from GitLab's CEO, Bill Harding, that crystallized the economic reality of this. He looked at the telemetry and calculated that, yes, you are getting 4 times the total volume of code from your engineers.
Right.
But you are only getting 12% more actual business value.
It is the ultimate illusion of progress. You are moving 10 times faster, but you are driving in a circle.
Let me try a metaphor to see if I'm tracking the mechanics of this OFSI data correctly.
Go for it.
Imagine you're a senior executive and you hire a hyperactive intern. This intern is technically brilliant, but has zero business experience.
Okay.
Every single hour, this intern hands you a 500-page strategic report. It looks absolutely incredible. It's professionally formatted. The charts are beautiful. The grammar is flawless.
That's great so far.
But you have absolutely no idea if the underlying math and the financial models is right. And you physically do not have the time to read 500 pages an hour to double check their work.
Right.
So after a few days, you just start rubber stamping the reports and sending them directly to the board of directors.
That is exactly the dynamic. But let's take that metaphor and scale it to computational speeds. It's not one intern. It's 10,000 interns.
Oh, wow.
And they are all modifying the underlying financial models of the company simultaneously. Eventually, that rubber stamp math bankrupts the company.
Obviously.
And the reason this AI-generated code is so uniquely difficult for human engineers to review why they give up and just rubber stamp it, it comes down to 3 specific cognitive hurdles outlined by Adi Osmani, an engineering leader who analyzed this phenomenon.
The first hurdle is a total loss of intent.
Yes.
And this one fascinated me because when a human developer writes code, there is a rich inner monologue happening. If I'm reviewing my coworker's code and I ask, hey, why did you use this specific, slightly weird database structure here? They can articulate their reasoning.
Right. They can say, well, I considered option A, but it would have caused latency issues on mobile, so I went with option B.
But the AI does not have an inner monologue that it shares with the code base. Its chain of thought, the probabilistic reasoning that led it to generate that specific syntax, is entirely deleted the moment the text is output.
Exactly. You, as the human reviewer, are handed a pristine, lifeless block of 500 lines of code. You essentially have to play the role of a forensic investigator, working backward from the syntax to reverse engineer why the machine made those choices.
Which sounds exhausting.
It takes more cognitive effort to understand the AI's code than it would have taken to just write it yourself.
The second hurdle, Osmani points out, is that the AI only solves for the local optimum.
Which means the AI might generate a function that is technically flawless in complete isolation. It perfectly solves the prompt. But the AI is blind to the unwritten historical context of your specific organization.
Like internal politics or old technical debt.
Exactly. It doesn't know that your CPO absolutely despises a certain architectural pattern because it caused a massive outage 3 years ago. It doesn't know that a specific legacy database table is notoriously brittle and will crash if you send it too many concurrent requests.
So it lacks the global institutional context that human engineers carry around in their heads.
Correct. And the third hurdle is what Osmani calls plausible but hollow code.
This one is insidious.
It really is. The AI is fundamentally designed to be a people pleaser. It is statistically weighted to give you an answer that looks correct. So it writes code that looks incredibly defensive and robust on the surface, includes lots of error handling loops, the variable names are perfectly descriptive, the formatting is beautiful.
But that aesthetically pleasing packaging often acts as camouflage, doesn't it?
Exactly. It hides the fact that the core critical business logic inside the function is either completely hallucinated or mathematically flawed. As a reviewer, you have to dig through 100 lines of beautifully formatted fluff just to realize the core calculation is backward.
This specific dynamic, the flood of plausible but hollow code overwhelming human reviewers, is causing immense friction in the open source world right now. Open source maintainers are essentially the unpaid quality assurance team for the internet's infrastructure, and they are breaking under the strain.
Which brings us back to Linus Torvalds, the creator of Linux.
Right. The sources included a really candid conversation between him and Dirk Hondel. Linus pointed out a staggering statistic. GitHub now hosts over 480 million repositories.
480 million.
And the maintainers of critical projects like the Linux kernel are being buried alive under a flood of what he calls drive-by AI patches and bug reports.
The mechanism of a drive-by report is infuriating for a maintainer. A user runs an AI agent against the Linux code base. The AI flags a supposed security vulnerability and automatically generates a patch.
So far, sounds helpful.
But then the human user blindly submits this patch to the Linux maintainers, hoping to get credit for contributing. When the maintainers review the code, find it's completely hollow, and ask the submitter for clarification on the logic. The human has no idea what the code actually does.
They didn't write it, so they don't know.
Right. They can't answer the question, so they just ghost the maintainers, wasting incredibly valuable senior engineering time.
But what's fascinating about Torvald is that despite this overwhelming flood of garbage code, he isn't a doomer.
No, not at all.
When interviewers try to bait him into panicking, saying things like, oh, AI is going to write 99% of our code, isn't this the end of software engineering? He gets angry, but not because he's terrified of the robots.
He gets angry because the panic shows a complete lack of historical perspective.
Yeah.
He forcefully points out that 100% of the code running the modern world is already written by machines.
The compiler.
Exactly. Torvald's been doing this long enough to remember writing raw machine code, literally calculating hexadecimal numbers by hand for a 6502 processor in the early days.
Wow.
That was human-generated code. Then we invented assemblers, and then we invented high-level compilers. When a developer writes in C or Java today, they are writing human-readable text.
Right, but the computer doesn't run Java directly.
No, the compiler, a machine, reads that text, completely rewrites it, optimizes it, and generates the actual machine code that the computer's processor executes. AI is simply the next layer of abstraction, the next layer of compilation.
So in the future, you will use AI to generate the human-readable code, which the compiler will then use to generate the machine code.
Exactly. But he makes a critical unbending point. Even when you use a compiler, if you want to maintain a complex system for 35 years, the way he has maintained the Linux kernel, you still have to look at the generated output.
You still have to fundamentally understand the architecture of the system.
Yes. You can't just trust the machine blindly.
Which forces us to confront the most urgent question in the industry right now. If Torvalds is right that we must understand the generated output to survive, but the FSAI data is also right that human eyeballs can no longer scale to read the sheer volume of machine code being generated, how do we prevent our digital infrastructure from collapsing?
It's the million-dollar question.
If humans can't review the code fast enough, who is checking the math?
And that is exactly where Dave Farley's proposed solution comes in.
Yeah.
And it represents a massive paradigm shift. He argues that the only way to survive the Jevons paradox code flood is through the strict, unyielding implementation of continuous delivery.
For those listening who might not be deep in the DevOps weeds, continuous delivery, or CD, is a software engineering practice where teams produce software in very short automated cycles.
Right. The goal is to ensure that the software can be reliably released to production at any given moment. And the beating heart, the core engine of a CD pipeline, is an exhaustive automated test suite.
Farley says that we have to take the burden of review off human eyeballs and transfer it to the machines. The automated test suite must become the ultimate, unemotional arbiter of quality.
The pipeline doesn't care if a human wrote the code over 3 weeks or an AI generated it in 3 seconds. It enforces the exact same rigorous mathematical standards.
Let's use a mechanical analogy.
Okay, let's hear it.
Think of AI as strapping a massive high-powered jet engine to the back of a car. If you ignite that jet engine, but you haven't installed a steering wheel and you haven't installed highly calibrated brakes, you aren't going to get to your destination faster.
No, you are just going to crash into a wall at a much higher, much more destructive speed.
Exactly. A rigorous, continuous delivery pipeline is the steering and the brakes. Farley's point is that if you don't already have that automated infrastructure in place, introducing AI isn't going to make a bad engineering team better.
It will just make a bad team fail exponentially faster.
So what does this all mean for the human being sitting at the keyboard? It means the fundamental nature of the job is undergoing a metamorphosis. We are moving away from writing lines of syntax, and we are moving toward building automated immune systems for our software.
I think immune system is the perfect way to conceptualize it. And practically, on a day-to-day basis, this means implementing what Adi Osmani calls a blast radius review strategy.
Okay, what is that?
It means you can no longer treat every line of AI-generated code equally. You have to ruthlessly tailor the amount of human cognitive effort based on how much damage the code could do if the AI hallucinated.
Let's break down the layers of that blast radius strategy, because this is the practical playbook for surviving the complexity bomb. The first layer is for solo projects, internal tools, or quick prototypes. This is a low blast radius. If it breaks, no customers are impacted. For this layer, Osmani says you rely 100% on the automated tests.
Right.
If the AI con passes the tests, you ship it to production immediately. You do not waste a single second of expensive human time arguing over the formatting, the variable names, or the aesthetic style of the AI's code.
But as you scale up to growing teams, where multiple developers are modifying the same system, the blast radius increases. Here, you introduce a layered review process.
How does that work?
You let agentic CI/CD pipelines, essentially AI reviewers, check the syntax, look for infinite loops, and enforce basic security protocols. The machines review the machines.
Well, that's smart.
You save the highly constrained human brain power strictly for reviewing the macro architecture. Does this logic align with the business goal?
And then you reach the top tier enterprise or mission critical systems. High blast radius. We're talking about a banking core, a healthcare records database, or an aviation control system.
Yeah, if this fails, the company goes under or people get hurt.
For this tier, the review process gets hardcore. You require the AI to explicitly generate what they call decision logs.
This is a brilliant engineering forcing function. Before the AI is allowed to submit a pull request, you prompt it to output a markdown file, a decisionlog.md.
What goes in that file?
In this document, the AI must detail its reasoning. It must list the alternative architectural approaches it considered and rejected, and articulate exactly why it chose the path it did, referencing the constraints in the original prompt.
And if it doesn't?
If the AI or the developer blindly submitting the AI's work cannot provide that coherent inner monologue, the code is automatically rejected by the pipeline. No human even bothers to review it.
Think about how radically this redefines the identity of the developer. The sources suggest we are moving past the era of the developer as a digital bricklayer, painstakingly typing out syntax one character at a time.
The new role looks far more like a software biologist.
Or a forensic investigator.
Exactly. Think about what a biologist does. A biologist doesn't build the cell from scratch, molecule by molecule. They observe the cell. They run diagnostics on it.
They poke it to see how it reacts.
Right. They trace its behaviors to understand how it fits into the broader, incredibly complex ecosystem of the body. Future developers will be managing the context window of the environment and the constraints that the AI operates within, rather than micromanaging individual lines of code.
They are studying the behavior of complex digital organisms.
And to truly grasp how an AI operates as this software biologist, to understand how it maps these ecosystems, we have to look closely at how these frontier models actually process information.
Because they do it in a way that is fundamentally alien to how a human brain works, right?
Totally alien.
Yeah.
And this difference becomes massive when they're unleashed on ancient legacy systems.
This was easily one of the most fascinating technical deep dives in the research. We have this tendency as humans to anthropomorphize AI. We assume it's just a smart brain, and therefore, if it can read a coding language, it should be equally good at reading an English novel.
But the sources show a massive divergence there. AI agents are fundamentally structurally better at processing and reasoning through computer code than they are at reading human literature.
Why is that? I mean, text is text, isn't it?
Not to the AI. Mm-hmm. It comes down to a structural shift in the underlying technology, moving from what researchers call one-shot intelligence, answering a single prompt in isolation, to endurance. Modern frontier models like Claude Opus 4.7 and GPT 5.2 now feature a staggering 1 million token context window.
Let's give that some scale for the listener. 1 million tokens is roughly 750,000 words. That is the length of the entire Harry Potter series, or an incredibly massive enterprise code base held in the AI's active working memory all at exactly the same time.
It's hard to even wrap your head around.
A human reads sequentially, chapter by chapter. The AI processes the entire million tokens simultaneously in parallel.
Right. And while you theoretically could feed an AI a million words of literature, human language is what researchers call semantically loose.
It is incredibly ambiguous.
Yeah, it relies on associative logic, cultural tropes, subjective interpretation, sarcasm, unreliable narrators. The meaning of a sentence in Chapter 10 might completely change how you interpret a sentence in Chapter 2. Meaning in literature is distributed and open to endless debate.
But code is the exact opposite of that. Code is syntactically rigid.
Precisely. Code is deterministic. It is essentially a massive state machine. It relies entirely on the transitive property of logic. If variable A equals B and B equals C, then A must absolutely equal C.
There is no room for subjective interpretation or sarcasm in Java.
None at all. If the AI is tasked with refactoring a massive repository containing 100 interconnected files, and it gets a single variable name wrong in file 99, The whole system throws a fatal error and crashes.
And here's where it gets amazing that crash is actually the key to the AI's learning process.
Right, because code offers an execution feedback loop.
The AI can write a hypothesis, test it against a compiler, get an immediate, objective, mathematically irrefutable error message, and self-correct instantly.
It uses the rigid syntax of the code to build a perfect multi-dimensional mathematical graph of logic in its working memory. Huh? You can't compile a novel to see if the plot holds up to structural integrity.
Which is exactly why the major AI labs use complex coding tasks to train the generalized reasoning capabilities of these models. It forces the neural network to learn that step one must be flawlessly, objectively correct before step two is even possible.
And this rigorous graph-building capability becomes an absolute superpower when you apply it to the most dreaded task in software engineering legacy modernization.
Oh, the IBM Java legacy modernization case study in the sources was mind-blowing on this exact point. Let's paint the picture. Imagine you are a major global bank.
Okay.
You have a massive ancient financial application written in Java 20 years ago. The business side of the bank wants to add a real-time AI risk scoring feature to the loan approval process, but they can't.
Because the underlying code is a tangled, undocumented nightmare.
It's a classic software iceberg. The content developers only see the tip, the user interface. Beneath the surface are two decades of undocumented hotfixes, deprecated frameworks that haven't been updated since 2015, and a terrifying web of tangled dependencies.
In these legacy scenarios, human developers literally spend 60 to 70% of their time just trying to understand the context before they dare to change a single line of code.
Because if they don't, they trigger a catastrophe. It's like trying to figure out why the loan approval system secretly shares a vital database table with the compliance reporting system.
Right. If a human developer touches the loan code to add the new AI feature, the compliance reports suddenly break, the regulators get angry, and no one knows why.
This is exactly where the 1 million token context window shines. You don't unleash the AI agent as a coder. You unleash it as a building inspector.
I love that term.
You feed the entire massive million-line code base into its active context window all at once. It uses its perfect parallel logical mapping to essentially X-ray the walls of the application.
It traces every single wire, every hidden dependency, every forgotten shared database table across thousands of files simultaneously.
And it does all of this before a single human being picks up a hammer to start making changes. It maps the dependencies, proposes safe, mathematically sound boundaries to extract the old logic, and it even generates automated tests for obscure edge cases that the human developers didn't even know existed.
It's like, hey, what happens to the shared database if a credit check times out midway through a transaction?
Exactly. But the critical non-negotiable safeguard here, the thing that keeps the bank from going offline, is the hierarchy of authority.
Yes, the AI is the inspector, but the human is the final authority. Humans must review and approve the mapped boundaries that the AI proposes.
Every change the AI makes must stay quarantined in a version control system like Git.
There are absolutely no autonomous deployments directly to live servers. The AI analyzes the complexity, but the human exercises the judgment.
And this incredible capability to map and understand complex systems isn't just changing how we build software, it is rapidly, aggressively changing who is building software.
What's fascinating here is if we connect this back to the broader macroeconomic picture we started with, we are entering an era where everyone, regardless of their technical background, becomes an orchestrator of digital systems.
We saw this vividly in the PathMode report on cross-organizational adoption. They found that companies are now reaching 89% AI adoption across entirely non-engineering departments.
89%, that's huge.
We aren't just talking about junior developers using Copilot. We are talking about lawyers building automated, complex contract review tools using AI. We are talking about UX designers prototyping fully functional database-connected web apps in real time during live customer interviews.
But this explosion of non-technical creation brings us right back to the existential danger of the delegation gap. Think about the lawyer building the contract tool. If that lawyer uses vibe coding, just chatting with the AI until the tool looks like it works and the AI inevitably hallucinates a critical piece of logic deep in the system, that lawyer cannot open the hood.
Right. They can't read the code.
They cannot read the underlying Python or JavaScript to course-correct the machine. They literally do not have the technical intuition to spot the plausible but hollow code we talked about earlier.
Which means for non-technical orchestrators, writing structured intent specs isn't just a best practice or a good idea.
No, it is the only safeguard they have against catastrophic failure.
They have to replace code-level understanding with outcome-level confidence. They have to know how to test the edges of the box, even if they don't know how the box was built.
And this reality that millions of non-technical users will be directing fleets of autonomous agents means the interface between the human and the AI becomes the ultimate battleground of the next decade.
That makes total sense, because how do we actually communicate our highly specific intent to hundreds of digital workers running in the background, especially if typing prompts into a chat box is too slow and imprecise?
The Google Developers Panel had a fascinating, slightly mind-bending discussion about this exact bottleneck. Because you're right, the chat box is not going to scale.
If you are a manager directing a fleet of 50 digital interns, you can't spend your entire day typing out paragraphs of text to each of them.
They pointed heavily toward voice and audio as the next major frontier for orchestration. Imagine intelligent agents that can interrupt you, much like a highly competent human coworker.
Oh, wow. Like they just chime in.
Yeah. If an agent is running a 7-hour autonomous task in the background and hits a critical blocker, it exercises judgment. It decides whether to silently ping you on Slack for a non-urgent issue, send a detailed email report, or literally speak to you through an earpiece to interrupt your current meeting because the database is about to crash.
And it gets even more sci-fi when they start talking about visual interfaces. They discuss the concept of dynamic FPS frames per second for real-time video analysis.
Yeah, Tulsi Doshi from Google mentioned that experiment.
Where they tried to use AI to analyze dance choreography to understand something that physically complex, lyrical, and fast-moving, the standard 30 frames per second camera feed isn't enough.
The AI needs to dynamically throttle up to incredibly high frame rates to capture the micro movements and the physical logic of the dance.
The AI literally has to see the world at a completely different speed than human beings do.
And if the AI is moving that fast, processing reality at hundreds of frames a second, human input becomes the absolute bottleneck. We physically cannot type or speak fast enough to direct the machine's full potential.
Varun Mahan joked about this, comparing the future of human-computer interaction to professional Super Smash Bros. Players.
Wait, I love this analogy.
It's so good. So we're talking about a near future where a developer or an orchestrator isn't just casually typing on a mechanical keyboard. They're yelling verbal commands into a mic while simultaneously tapping foot pedals and executing rapid-fire gesture-based combos with their hands like an esports pro just to input their intent fast enough to keep up with the agents.
It sounds utterly absurd when you say it out loud, but logically it tracks perfectly.
It really does.
As AI eliminates the need to write syntax, the job shifts entirely to information retrieval and intent direction. The speed of human input and the intelligence of the interface the AI chooses to communicate back to us will define who wins the next decade of economic productivity.
It is a wild, borderline, overwhelming vision of the future. So let's synthesize this journey we've been on today.
Good idea.
We started with Dario Amodi's fear that AI will wipe out developers by generating zero-cost, disposable code that renders human engineering obsolete.
But by digging into the actual unglamorous mechanics of software engineering, we discovered that cheap code doesn't solve our problems. It creates a massive complexity bomb.
Jevons' paradox guarantees that as code gets cheaper, we will demand exponentially more of it, stressing our systems to the breaking point.
Right, which means the real future isn't the death of the software engineer. It is the necessary, forced evolution of the engineer.
They're moving from being syntax typists to system orchestrators. They're becoming software biologists who map vast legacy ecosystems using million-token context windows.
And above all, they must become unyielding trust guardians, armed with rigorous intent specs and continuous delivery pipelines to ensure these incredibly fast machines don't drive our digital infrastructure off a cliff.
It's a fundamental shift from creating the raw material to managing the ecosystem.
But as we wrap up, I want to leave you and everyone listening with one final thought to mull over, something that pushes this entire dynamic to its absolute logical extreme.
Okay, hit me. Let's hear it.
We've spent this entire deep dive talking about how humans must build guardrails like continuous delivery pipelines, blast radius reviews, and intent specs so that human minds can continue to understand and control AI-generated code. But consider Jevons' paradox, taken to its ultimate extreme over the next 10 or 20 years. If fleets of AI agents are generating millions of lines of code a second, iterating endlessly, integrating with other AI systems at light speed.
Oh boy.
Eventually, they will build legacy systems of such immense alien complexity that no human brain could ever map or comprehend them. Even with a million token contest window, the scale will exceed human biological limits.
So what happens then?
When the only thing capable of understanding an AI's legacy code base is another, more advanced AI, does software engineering cease to be a human engineering discipline entirely? Does it simply become a high-speed, invisible negotiation between machines while we just sit back and hope they don't change the terms of the deal?
Wow, think about that for a second. An entirely alien digital architecture running our global economy, where humans are no longer engineers, but essentially diplomats, politely asking the machines to negotiate with each other on our behalf. That is a heavy, fascinating, and slightly terrifying place to leave it. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep exploring, keep questioning the rapidly changing world around you, and we will catch you next time.